by the Paranormal King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of October 9th, 2018, and episode number 371. And this is your host, as always, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And yeah, it's a warm one. It's unusually warm. Just talking about that off the air. And everyone seems to be, Dita in the chat room is complaining about how hot it is in the chat room. I didn't realize it was hot in the chat room. But apparently it's even hot in the chat room here. And if you're not in the chat room, well, you're missing out on some extra heat because it's warm here in the Paranormal King Radio Network chat room, I guess. But yeah, it's really weird, and it is October. Yes, it is, and it's unusually warm. We have some bad weather down there in the Gulf of Mexico, headed up toward the panhandle of Florida. So hope everyone is safe down there. I have a few friends that live down in that area, so kind of keeping a very close eye on that situation. And, you know, I don't know if that's causing a little bit of the heat to move up this way, or it's keeping the jet stream from coming down and giving us our seasonally cool weather that we're supposed to be having. But I'm not complaining. I don't mind the warm weather. It allows me to get outside and do some other things that I'd like to be doing. And one of which we'll be talking about tonight, as I ask you this question: what's swimming in your lake? Yeah, and we'll talk about the reporter that was interrupted by an unidentifiable creature, which I've identified. We figured it out. Well, not we, but somebody else did. And I'll bring you that information tonight. And a gigantic invisible UFO over Myrtle Beach. I've had several people that have pushed that story to me like I had no idea was happening. I was well aware of it, but a lot of inquisitive people wanted to know what was going on down there. And I'll tell you what, kids do the darndest things. And lately, kids have found the dandiest things on the bottom of lakes. And that was my headline for the story, but I wasn't sure if I wanted to go with that one, or I wanted to go with "there can be only one." No, make that two. I don't know if anybody will get that. It's an old Highlander joke from a movie from way back when. It shows my age. It's a cult classic, though. And we'll talk about the strange object that washed ashore in South Carolina. So a little bit of a South Carolina theme going on tonight, I guess. And we'll also talk about the new planet discovery in our solar system. You don't hear that very often, a new planet being discovered in our solar system. It should be front page news. Everyone should be talking about this. But alas, only the UFO people are talking about it, as they think it's Nibiru. No, it's not Nibiru, but we'll talk about that and give you a little bit of planetary information right here tonight on the Paranormal News Insider. And normally I do. Gosh, I haven't had a sponsor in a while. I almost started talking about sponsors. Well, I sat through last night. I kind of gave up. I'm going to admit, I kind of gave up on updating the events listing for this year. There's a lot going on, and I could dig in, but there's a lot happening the next couple of weeks. But I did update it as far as what events are over on my calendar, but there's still quite a few good events left on my calendar, but I'm sure there's a lot in your area. So just keep an eye out. Go to these things. They're a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun. I'll talk about an event I was just at this weekend. But again, check out the Paranormal Conferences and Conventions list at paranewsinsider.com. Go to paranewsinsider.com, click on the events tab at the top, and check out this list of events. It's a great time of the year to get out and see these things. I've got kind of a kind of a lineup, and I've got one this weekend, and I got one in a couple of weeks. Yeah, Highlander. I love that movie. It's probably one of my, maybe my favorite movie of all time. I mean, it's got action, it's got history, it's got people chopping each other's heads off, and it's got Queen doing the soundtrack. I mean, you can't argue with a movie like that. They don't make them like they used to. And they've been talking about rebooting that one for quite a while. But hopefully they don't. Hopefully they don't. I mean, leave some stuff alone, please. Anyway, yes, this last weekend, October 5th and 6th, well, I drove down on the 5th, got into town down in Piqua, Ohio. It's a little town just north of Dayton, Ohio, which is on the outskirts, maybe about an hour west of Columbus, Ohio. In a weird spot. It was a weird spot. I was talking about cryptozoology, which is weird. Normally, I'm booked for ghost events, but I've got all sorts of people asking me to talk about cryptozoology. I got two emails today of people that want me to talk about cryptozoology between this year and next year. It's so weird. There must be a shift going on with people going away from ghosts into this cryptozoology stuff. I don't know, at least here in Ohio. But anyway, I was down in Piqua, Ohio for an event called UnCon 12. And UnCon stands for unconventional. And they have a theme every year. And it's mostly revolves around comic book type themes. But this year was Freak Show. So, of course, they call me in. And I fit in just nicely in the Freak Show. It was pretty cool. But they had a ghost group down there. And my gosh, just a really great list of people. But huge thanks to David Dixon and his staff for the unconventional convention, for the hospitality that he and the other people that he works with that put on this event that he gave for me and my wife. We had a fun time down there. It was a great time. It was really weird. It was a little different because it wasn't your typical event where there's a lot of guests and a lot of different people. It was like a big family. It's like a big family reunion where everyone gets together and just gets all comic booky. Yes, comic booky. I just created that term myself. People were dressing up in costumes. Captain America, Black Panther was there, and people were just dressing up as all sorts of characters. It was just really cool. And the event took place in probably one of the most unique and convenient locations I've ever seen at any event I've ever been in. It was called the Miami Valley Center Mall. And the event was basically held in an excess empty store space within the mall. So it was a gigantic room that we had at our disposal. And obviously, being in a mall, there was plenty of shopping. You didn't have to go outside. You could just walk around the mall. There was a comic book and sports collection shop. There was a Halloween store that was open. And your basic mall-type stores, clothing stores and whatnot. And also a sporting goods store, which I was in heaven there for that. But even weirder, or should I say even more convenient, was that also attached directly to the mall was a Comfort Inn. So there's a hotel connected directly to the mall. So all I had to do was walk to the lobby of the hotel and walk right into the mall. And you were literally 50 feet away, if that, from the entrance to the event. And it, like I said, this event has basically been put on by a large group of people for the last 11 years. And David says that they don't advertise much. But this year they decided to open it up a little bit more to the general public. And that's why they invited myself, you know, to get a little bit different feel and maybe attract some other visitors there. Guest speakers and presenters, other than myself, included a ghost group called Paravisions. There was also Bill Blair, he's actually the Guinness Book of World Record holder in the category for most special effect makeup characters portrayed in a career. And he's been in numerous movies. including TV shows, but also movies. TV shows including Babylon 5, Sliders. Sliders is one of my favorite shows from back in the day. A couple of Star Trek shows, including Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise. He was also in Westworld, which never really got into, but I know a lot of people love that show. And like I said, a whole lot more. And he had his personal makeup artist there that he put on makeup in front of everyone and talked about the different things that people go through when you put on makeup and the different things that makeup can do to you and how to do all this stuff. It was really, really interesting. You never thought it would be interesting watching somebody get makeup put on, but it was. It was really neat. And Bill Blair also, he gave me a good helping hand. If you follow me on Facebook, you saw all this stuff transpire all weekend long. He actually helped me get home through this giant Stargate that they had at the event. He dressed up in makeup and came to my rescue. I'm not really at liberty to talk about what happened to me, but it was a fun time. Nothing really happened. We were just posing for pictures, but it was still fun to interact with those guys. There was also a juggling expert, David Kane, awesome juggler. And if that's not cool enough, Gary Deer. He's an international award-winning whip artist. I didn't know there was such a thing. An international award-winning whip artist. And he displayed the reality behind this mysterious object and dispelled some of the movie folklore behind them, such as, you know, Indiana Jones kind of thing, where he whipped, what's her name, and pulled her closer to her. Well, that doesn't really work that way. But he did blow some candles out and hit a rose from a person's mouth. I mean, it was pretty cool stuff. And it was very loud. Very cool stuff. Also, Kenpo Joe Ribello, who's been a martial artist for at least 40 years, has probably got more black belts than I do belts, ties, and shoes, and probably pairs of pants. I don't know. It was just really a weird collection of people, but I felt like I fit right in. I did a cryptid program, and I kind of did it a little different. I normally do a structured PowerPoint presentation, but I kind of felt like the way this whole thing was, it wouldn't have fit in right. So I basically did something that I don't normally do. I just basically did it off the cuff. I kind of did it what I guess you would call gallery style. And I kind of introduced the topic and myself and then basically allowed the crowd to direct the information I was presenting through asking questions. And it was very interesting. It was very informative. Pretty cool. And after that, we all sat down and had dinner. And I tell you what, they really made me feel like family. So it was a great time, great event, and I hope that they do it next year. And in a couple of days, it's Tuesday night, so Friday morning I'm going to be driving out to Columbia, Pennsylvania. I'm going to be hanging out with Rick Fisher on Friday night. He's got an event that he's doing, a speaking engagement. He's talking about ghosts. And so I'll be hanging out with Rick Fisher. And then on Saturday, I'll be hanging out with Rick Fisher again, as he, myself, and Tim Renner are all speaking at the Albert Witch Day in Columbia, Pennsylvania, October 13th. It's going to be a great event. It's not a little Bigfoot. Well, I guess a medium-sized Bigfoot kind of guy that likes apples. So bring your apples if you're going to come. That's a really cool event. They're going to have hay rides and bake-offs and music and all sorts of interesting stuff this weekend. It's a long drive for me, but it's worth it. I've always wanted to go to this event, so I'm really excited to be able to speak at this event, let alone go to it. No, it's not Friday the 13th. It's Saturday the 13th. I don't know. It's just as scary, I guess. That thing that there's a meme on Facebook about Friday the 13th is on a Thursday for the first time in 666 years or something, and people still get confused by that. Anyway, yeah, I got a lot of stuff I'm lining up for 2019, but let's get through this year first. Before I start talking about all that stuff, and I'll also be at Westerville, Ohio, the Westerville Public Library on Tuesday, October 30th, And we'll see. I'm going to have to do something about the show, I guess. Maybe we'll do something different. I don't know. I usually do a Halloween-style show anyway. So got to get something, maybe the next couple of days, put something together for you guys. But you didn't come here for that, did you? You've been waiting for me to say that. You've came here for the news. And we have some really interesting news for you tonight. Some of it's paranormal. Some of it's just really out there. And some of it's just downright scary stuff. But no Bigfoot. No Bigfoot this week. I don't know. I think he's kind of hibernating right now, I think. Maybe I'll hear some stories. Maybe something will happen this weekend. I don't know. But definitely this weekend, maybe a little bit of Bigfoot stuff. We'll find out. But we're going to go to Chicago. So get your suit, get your black suit, your black tie, your black hat, and your black sunglasses. And let's get in that car. And let's just drive to Chicago. A little Blues Brothers stuff there. So, you know, I mentioned it's warm. It's summertime's over. It's fall, but it's warm. So I should be out there doing one of my favorite activities, which is kayaking. I love kayaking. I'm an avid kayaker, although I really didn't get out that much this year. I did spend one weekend out in the Allegheny Reservoir, which was really cool to put your tent and everything on the back of a kayak and kayak out into a very large reservoir and go camping overnight. It was a lot of fun. But not too many other places I went to this year. A couple of years ago, I went out probably about 20 times. And kayak mostly here in Ohio, reservoirs, a few rivers, and very tempted to kayak in areas near Lake Erie, such as Presque Isle, which has a really nice inner kind of area and swampland that you can kayak when you're kind of a little bit out into the lake, because Lake Erie is pretty rough. It's not something that you really want to get caught up in a little kayak. And there's a lot of rivers that empty into the lake from my home state of Ohio. And I tell you, when I'm kayaking, again, people that follow me see these pictures all the time of these animals that I find. If I'm able to get a picture, it's not that easy to get pictures from a kayak. I'll see fish popping out of the water. A lot of times they catch something on the surface. I'll see them swimming next to the kayak in clear water. I've seen a lot of deer, fox, a lot of birds, including geese, some really strange swans and geese I've seen. Obviously a lot of ducks, numerous great blue herons, which are my favorite, cormorants, osprey, bald eagles in two states. This year I had one basically fly within about 50 feet of me and land on a log. I just wanted to stand up and just, I don't know, sing something American. It was just a wonderful sight to see. I mean, I've seen bald eagles in probably like five or six states, but it's still awesome to see them, because knowing where they were, you know, 20, 30 some odd years ago, that's pretty cool. Anyway, you never know what you're going to encounter. And I'll tell you what, I'm always careful when I'm kayaking, especially if I'm out by myself, which I get yelled at for that all the time. Don't go kayaking by yourself. It's not safe, especially in a large reservoir with boaters. You never know what you might hit from above. Something that could be just below the surface, a log or something sunk in that can knock you in the water. Not safe. You know, boaters, they don't care about kayakers. They go really super fast, create a heavy wake. You might hit a fishing line or something. But I'll tell you what, one thing I'm always a little nervous of is actually finding an alligator in the water. I know that sounds silly. It sounds like a really silly thing to worry about. But, you know, we've all heard about that. Plenty of alligator stories. And I'll tell you, a lot of people have told me about alligators being seen and recovered in some of the reservoirs that I kayak in, although I've never been able to find anything substantiating these claims or rumors. I mean, we've all heard about the New York City sewers, alligators living down there and all those kind of things. But I'll tell you, there was a story from 2008 that went viral in Chicago where it was rumored that a giant alligator was pulled from Lake Michigan. But it was false. Interestingly, despite the 2008 incident in Chicago being a hoax, one was found less than 2 years later basking near a bridge in the Chicago River in early August. Back then, a man nicknamed Alligator Bob stated that he had rescued more than 70 alligators from Illinois and Wisconsin waterways. 70 alligators. And even scarier, just 2 weeks later, a second small alligator was rescued from the Chicago River. Yes, two alligators rescued, seen, and confirmed in less than a month. Granted, these were only about 3 feet long and obviously abandoned, but what a surprise. Well, if that wasn't enough, obviously, you know, I'm talking about research I've done here. And another story of an alligator has just popped its head above the surface just today. Chicago resident David Castaneda was fishing for salmon on Monday while kayaking for about 4.5 hours when he thought he saw a dead salmon floating in the Waukegan Harbor. Waukegan Harbor is about 40 miles north of Chicago along Lake Michigan, the western shore, and just about 10 miles south of the Wisconsin border. But when Castaneda saw the creature, he was in shock. I mean, obviously so. He paddled closer to get a look. That's what we all do. We want to get closer. He could tell it was a live alligator, but its mouth had been taped shut. So David called 911, and the 4-foot-long American alligator was eventually rescued and will be held until it can be assessed for its health and can get renourished. And I actually have a picture of that dude. Well, not Alligator Bob or David Castaneda, but of the alligator. It's in a van. It's taking a ride. So I'll throw that in the chat room there for you guys. Hopefully this works, and we'll see. Mr. Gator, meet the chat room. So there's a 4-foot-long alligator. Yeah, he's not very much to look at. But still, if I saw that in the water, I'd still be a little nervous. Mouth taped or not, I mean, these are vicious animals. Even one 4 feet long like that, he might do some damage. Although, yeah, they're in a cold water environment. They're going to be a little lethargic. Rob Carmichael, curator for the Wildlife Discovery Center in Lake Forest, where the alligator is now resting, said that the creature was on, quote, borrowed time, unquote, due to having its mouth taped shut as well as being in the colder water. It's obviously not a mature alligator, so it would have a little harder time surviving than an adult alligator. And contrary to popular belief, alligators can actually survive in cold water. Although, yes, their metabolism will slow as water temperature goes pretty much below 70 degrees. And the area the alligator was caught in was probably in the mid to high 60s at this point. And alligators, they seem to tolerate the cold, although they prefer warmer freshwater areas, primarily in swamp areas. And alligators actually, there's been film of these alligators surviving in icy conditions. And I believe it was North Carolina. There's a video somewhere on YouTube. They go into a dormant state. And what they do is they float on the surface. So their noses are outside of the ice and their bodies are actually under the ice. And they can survive. It's known. It's well known and documented. So think about that the next time you go into any body of water anywhere. And a lot of people think that alligators only live in Florida, or maybe just the Gulf Coast, right? No, they currently live in North Carolina, and they've been in there for some time. And they actually have been observed living in western Tennessee and parts of Virginia. That's pretty far north. That's kind of makes me a little nervous there. Now, that's not all. Other scary animal sightings in the Chicago area include, in 2014, a nearly 14-foot-long Burmese python was found in pretty much the same area as this recent alligator. In 2006, it was reported that a fisherman hooked a piranha from the Des Plaines River outside of Chicago. And another piranha was caught in November of 2008, also in the Des Plaines River, hiding in the warm wastewater of a treatment plant. You know, they don't survive very well in cold water either. And yeah, good thing summer is over. And I think I was going to try to go kayaking at least once more this year, but I don't know now. I'm a little nervous about that situation. It probably got about 1, 2, 3, 4. I probably got about 8 links to all these stories, but I'm not going to throw them all in the chat room. I don't want to inundate the chat room, but I am going to put one in here about this current one, about this recent 4-foot-long alligator rescued. I didn't realize it was it happened this many times, but apparently it's an often occurrence. So, you know, it does fit in with cryptozoology to a certain extent, because these are animals that shouldn't be there. They're kind of out of place. Yes, a lot of cryptozoologists don't like that out of place thing, because obviously these are just animals that were dumped into the water, maybe. Who knows? But yeah, a small one like that's probably not going to make its way too much further north on its own. So now we move to a video created that created controversy last Wednesday, as speculation ran rampant as to what kind of creature seemingly wandered into the live shot of a reporter who was doing an on-site report in Utah in the early morning hours. I believe it was on local flooding. Now, to many, the creature appeared to be a mountain lion that wandered up to a reporter and nonchalantly walked right by her and then out of the shot. I mean, the creature was the right color. It had a long tail with a black tip on it. And, you know, it's Utah, so there easily could have been a mountain lion in that area. And a few other things kind of added to that initial speculation, as this whole thing was kind of brewing on social media at the time. This entire story took place probably in less than 2 hours. The Utah Division of Wildlife Resources stated they could not identify the animal from the video, which, yeah, created even more speculation. Some were saying it was a dog, while many others said mountain lion. I mean, a dog, a cat? You think we'd be able to figure that out pretty easily. I'll tell you, when I first watched the video, just the first few seconds, it seemed to me that it could be, in fact, a mountain lion. But it didn't take, I mean, for me, I look at mountain lion footage all the time, videos and photographs constantly, every day, seems like. So it didn't take me too long to figure out that the body of the animal and the movement weren't quite right. It looked more dog-like to me. And you factor in the KUTV reporter Morgan Saxton, who initially was sidetracked during her report, stating, quote, that what you're seeing is actually a dog coming into our live shot, unquote. She paused and she kind of seemed unsure and a little shocked. And strangely, as the animal got closer to her, she didn't seem as positive about the identification. She said, quote, I think it's a dog. I'm not sure. But there's some sort of creature below me, unquote. And she continued on with her report. And she did sound nervous and unsure, but she never moved. She didn't jump out of the way or make any kind of wild actions as the animal went by her. The animal did turn, but the reporter was blocking the view of what the creature looked like from the front. Now, fellow reporter Chase Thomason fueled the Twitter fire by reporting a few times on his Twitter feed. Should be doing the news there, Chase. That he felt a cougar had walked through the live shot. For me, this would not be a situation that a cougar would just walk up to and around a person, especially with a cameraman standing there. That might have been a sound person standing there. So probably not a mountain lion or a cougar here. They don't like people. Contrary to some of these stories about them seemingly going after people, we're not on their menu. And they're not curious about us. They want nothing to do with us. A cougar would make every effort to get away from the situation. and wouldn't just nonchalantly walk by. Not very likely at all. And if that was in fact a mountain lion, they would have found it and probably killed it because of that situation. While the color of the body was very close to a mountain lion, the one thing that jumped out to me, I had to watch the video a second and a third time to really kind of confirm this. The backs of the ears weren't the right color. I know you're looking at mountain lion photos too much when you could tell by the ears alone that it's not a mountain lion. To me, it was definitely a dog, especially the way it walked. But I wasn't 100% sure because there wasn't really enough information other than the ears and the posture. It wasn't really 100% to go on. I mean, it's a pretty fairly decent size animal, but gosh, it was really hard to tell from just the angle that you were looking. But luckily, the Utah Division of Wildlife responded to the scene to see what was going on. Again, if they would have found a mountain lion, they probably would have hunted it down and killed it. But luckily, they actually found dog tracks. So to me, that was the end of the story. People were still speculating. And it didn't take too much longer after that for us to discover that it was, in fact, a dog, because the owner came forward and said, yes, my dog was right outside your live shot. And they did provide a photograph of said dog. And it makes you feel kind of silly when you see this and you see the video and you're thinking, gosh, that's got to be a mountain lion. But no, in fact, a cute little doggy. But it's, I don't know. Kind of the fur is kind of the same color. If I'd have seen his paws, or definitely his head being that dark, chocolatey brown color, I would have definitely known not a mountain lion. But it did cause a lot of, you know, a lot of people getting concerned and arguing back and forth. And it's interesting. You see these kind of photographs all the time, these videos, photographs popping up of an animal, and people misidentify it. Even when they have access to continue to watch it, see it numerous times, people still guess wrong. And it's really interesting. I mean, people were saying it was a cat when it was a dog. I mean, just craziness how, people just misinterpret this stuff. And it was on live TV. So it was multiple people, multiple viewers. It was on the Facebook for this KUTV news station. People were just interpreting it as a mountain lion. So, you know, maybe because they were out in the woods, I don't know, but people misinterpret things constantly. So it goes to show you that sometimes, yes, people are not very good witnesses. And we that get reports about mountain lions in different states that they're not supposed to be, we deal with this all the time. We know that people will see a house cat and misinterpret it as a mountain lion. And people say, well, how is that possible? It's completely different size. But yes, people still do. Even bobcats, which are a quarter of the size of a mountain lion, are also misinterpreted for mountain lions all the time. So sorry, yes, no Bigfoot stories this week. And we're going to go to UFO news. A giraffe attack? Did not hear about a giraffe attack. I did read about a lion attack in South America. Well, it was a guy, he had his own lion in his backyard, so shame on him anyway. That's what you get for having a wild animal in your backyard. I don't see a giraffe attack, but I'm sure it happens. They're not the easiest animals to get along with. I mean, they defend themselves against lions, so they're pretty ferocious creatures in their own right. But yeah, UFO news. This was one that I was kind of hoping would just float by, I guess, or just kind of go away on its own. But it grew its own legs, and it became a viral sensation, and not just a viral sensation, but the news media picked it up, including the New York Post, which is, I don't know, the New York Post is becoming like the Sun and a lot of the other UK papers. They're starting to print all kinds of questionable material. But anyway, it's running through the mainstream media. And it seems like there's always, every day, a UFO video running through the mainstream media. And I'd say most of them, if not all of them, have a very quick and honest solution behind them. Now, a recent video seems to have taken the internet by storm. And that's a pun that you'll figure out here in a second. The video was actually filmed back on August 5th of this year and was not uploaded until August 4th. It's got a lot of other vacation photos to go through, I guess. The video in question was a time-lapse video created by an unknown witness who was standing on the 2nd Avenue Pier looking toward the Skywheel there in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. In the sky is described to be a giant UFO lurking in the clouds as a thunderstorm whips through the area. So yeah, now you remember, now you get it. The video took the internet by storm. You get it? Okay, you got it now. That's great. Okay, ba-dum-bum. The video had originally been uploaded to MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, but has since made the rounds on many UFO websites. This is another example of a lack of problem solving by those who are so quick to get attention from posting these videos. While I quickly realized what it was, I was definitely not alone. It's not saying that I solved this by any stretch of the imagination when I first seen it. I'd also seen other people comment, make the same comment about what I was thinking, kind of reaffirmed what I was seeing. And then I did my own work on it, which I'll throw in the chat room here so you guys can see what this thing is. If you look carefully at this video, you can see lights in the sky. And that's what they're talking about. These lights are, if you connect the dots, make a giant UFO. You know, couldn't be a bunch of small UFOs. It's got to be a giant UFO. But if you look carefully, you can tell that the lights in the sky are actually matching the lights coming from the brightly lit beach area. There's nothing more than lens flare here, or reflection of the light from the lens cover into the lens. Probably just your run-of-the-mill lens flare here. You can easily draw a line from the bright lights in the sky to the bright lights on the beach if you just use straight lines. And I got a picture of that I did. I did that. I drew some straight lines here. So good luck here with the photos tonight here on the website here. So, well, I will do this one. I think this is the right one. Make it bigger. There it is. Okay, well, we'll do this one first. So there's a video and there's also a photograph. So there's actually two angles to this. But I'll show you the video, which was done from the 2nd Avenue Pier, which wasn't in any of the stories. I did that research on my own, figured out where this was taking place. So if you look at this still frame of the YouTube video, you can see the beach. You can see the Skywheel right there in the lower center area of the picture. You can also see in the water there a line of water where there's lights reflected down into the water. That's just normal reflection. And you see the lights in the sky, and I have arrows pointing toward bright light sources. Now, not all the light sources are showing reflections, but some of the brighter ones are. And if you could draw a straight line and they're not angled, I mean, that's pretty much your explanation. It's pretty slam dunk here. And there's also, at the left-hand side, you see the second one in is a bank of lights. That's like seven lights in a little row. Well, perfectly matches exterior lights on what appears to be a hotel right there, shining brightly outside. And it just, the leveling of the lights also match. When you see the leveling, the seven lights there, then to the left of it, there's a lower light that's pretty bright. I can see that one. I mean, it's pretty much, to me, it's slam dunk. You don't have to be a forensic scientist or genius to figure this kind of thing out. It's just simple observation. The other thing here is when you're watching the video, lighting flashes and the lights disappear. And you can also see into the clouds and there's no object in the picture. So if there was a UFO there and the lightning were to flash, it would have probably illuminated this giant object in the sky. One would think, right? But no such luck. You don't see any kind of illumination. And I have a set of four photographs here that I'll throw in the chat room. Also to back up what I'm saying here. You know, I'm not just full of hot air here. I do a little bit of research behind all these things. Well, that's ginormous. But you get the hint here. So you can see I've circled the time frame there, 16 seconds into this video. And you see on the left the flash, and to the right you see the lights. I don't know why they zoomed in on those lights. If they would have zoomed on the lights there on the left, I think it would have been dead giveaway. But nonetheless, when the lightning flashed, the lights disappeared, and alas, there is no object in the sky. I did it zoom close up, and you can also see on the left, you can see some lights in the sky, but there's no solid object there. There's nothing in the sky. So what's going on there? Doesn't look like a UFO to me. And I'm not sure if a lot of people realize this or not, but when you're watching a YouTube video, you can adjust the speed by clicking the settings button, which is a little round wheel. It's the same as on your phone, folks. Same thing. You click on that, and you can adjust the speed. You go to quarter speed. It's real simple. You can freeze a lightning flash like I did, and you can see the evidence for yourself. Another viral UFO photograph is also making the round. It's the same story here. It's just a different photograph from a different angle. This is just another run-of-the-mill UFO photograph. The very simple solution. And again, a lot of people figured this one out, not just me. But it's amazing that major press outlets like the New York Post, Fox News, they all ran this story without any other research. They just basically copied and pasted this and threw it into a story for people to click on. And I do have this other photograph here from the area. It's just a photograph, and it's from a side angle. Apparently, when the person was walking out on the pier, also took a picture of the skyline from a different angle with the same camera. And I'm going to guess, I haven't seen this yet, but I'm going to guess it's an iPhone, because we've been having a lot of issues with the iPhone and their reflection in the sky. It seems like every time I read a story about a UFO sighting with these lights in the sky, it's an iPhone. A lot of issues with these things. And there it is. There's another picture. And you can see from the side again, a horizontal bank of lines in two of these areas perfectly match up. The angle, going to the lower right, and the distance separating them matches the distance separating them on these big buildings, probably hotels, and a couple of other bright lights that perfectly match up with other lights that are seen. It's real simple stuff. It's not that hard to figure out. But I'm happy to do it for you guys. And I don't like being the bearer of bad news and ripping these things apart, but somebody has to. I mean, yeah, to me, it's obvious. It was obvious to a lot of other people, but you have a lot of people saying, people were freaking out saying, oh my gosh, the world's coming to an end. One of these stories I did read somewhere, somebody had commented on Twitter or Facebook that she had said she'd seen these lights in the sky as well. But you'd think Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, granted there was a thunderstorm going on, you'd think somebody else would have seen 40 or 50 lights in the sky at that time. But no, nobody did. The Fox News piece that I mentioned, they actually had a headline that said, quote, UFO spotted over Myrtle Beach, disturbing onlookers, unquote. But within the story is a quote from the person who filmed the event, who in their report said, quote, taking pictures and time lapse of the incoming storm, I was taking pictures off the edge of a long pier after dark, so there were no reflective surfaces around. I did not, here's the big thing. I did not notice the objects until I returned home and checked the photograph and video, unquote. So where's the disturbed onlookers here? And again, how many times have I said this? Last week, probably a few dozen times in the past, the person admitted they did not see anything at the time. Not saying that doesn't mean that there's nothing there, but I'd say that's pretty dramatic. If I'm going to line up a shot, I'm going to take a picture with a camera, or I'm going to set up time-lapse photography, I think I'm going to see these giant lights in the sky. And I'm going to be honest with you, even if I'm taking a picture through a camera and I'm trying to center up objects, I'm pretty darn sure I'm going to see these reflections. I can kind of think back to, let me think here. Well, I remember in June I was near the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland on a bridge looking toward big buildings just like this. And I remember seeing lens flare in the viewfinder of my camera or my phone. So I saw it. So I don't know why this person didn't see that, you know, especially somebody who's risking life and limb to go out there on the pier during a thunderstorm, which is really probably not the smartest thing in the world to do. So maybe that shows right there a little bit of lack of problem-solving skills to be out in the open water area taking pictures and not seeing things that you're taking pictures of. You know, I'm not sure how many onlookers would have been panicked by this event that was basically only happening in the camera. It's funny, though, how the owner stated in this statement that they were very sure to make sure they said there was nothing reflective where they were filming, because that's exactly what was happening. But it was their camera that was reflecting. And it might have been the suggestion of MUFON. So maybe I didn't read about this case in MUFON. I'm no longer a MUFON member, so I don't really have access to their files anymore. I used to be able to go into their case files and read about all this stuff and pull up pictures and do all this kind of detective work with this stuff. But I feel like paying that much money a year, it just isn't worth it for me to do all that with the direction that MUFON's going and some of the political things that have happened lately. Just felt that was right to distance myself from that. Gosh, but you know what? Many people, they just make up their mind about what they perceive as the truth, no matter how much evidence is stacked against them. This is a word of warning here. Don't let your subjective interpretation or feelings get the best of you. I mean, it was kind of shocking to read some of the comments here on this story where it was posted in different places all over the internet. A lot of people said that they thought these were airplanes coming in for a landing. I mean, okay, there is actually an airport very close to this location, to the south. From the vantage point of the viewer, it would be to the left, out of frame of all these pictures, very close to that area. But the lights aren't moving. Time-lapse photography, these lights are not moving anywhere. They're just sitting there because they're just reflections. And that's a lot of airplanes. It's a lot of airplanes. And it sure don't look like airplane lights. While others said this was just a product of CGI. Which CGI, you know, that's, you know, I say it a lot too. It's unfortunately, it's a knee-jerk reaction to a lot of videos that we don't understand. But it's, you have to observe. You have to let the information that you're seeing speak to you. And don't let your mind speak to you and tell you what to think about these things, because you'll get fooled each and every time. So let me see if I have, well, I'll throw the New York Post link into the chat room. Maybe. Okay. We'll see if this works. I'll get that in the chat room for you guys so you can look at it. I think the video is embedded in this story as well, so you'll be able to see the time-lapse video. But they, like I said, they kind of zoom in on the thing, which I like kind of just the version that's not so close to it. I think it works much better. just It's aggravating for me, some of these stories, but I have to cover them because they're viral and people are talking about them and there's lessons to be learned about these things. That's what I'm here for. But a story with no lessons attached, just a little bit of, I don't know, awesomeness. I don't know what other phrase I can use to describe this. This is a really cool story and a story that broke last week. And I'll admit, sometimes it's not hard. Sometimes it is hard. But this story actually left me a little confused because it sounded awful familiar. And I didn't think that this would happen more than once. So I thought, you know, sometimes a story will come up in the news and it's actually something that happened months ago or even years ago. And they act like it just happened. I don't know why. They just sometimes these news outlets like to regurgitate stories for different reasons. But in this particular story, an 8-year-old girl found an ancient sword in a lake in Sweden. The girl, who is named Saga Vanicek, told the local newspaper, quote, "I picked it up. I was going to drop it back in the water, but it had a handle, and I saw that it was a little bit pointy at the end and all rusty. I held it up in the air and I said, 'Daddy, I found a sword.' When he saw that it bent and was rusty, he came running and took it," unquote. Probably doesn't have the excitement and drama of a little 8-year-old girl, but I do my best. The object turned out to be a sword. It was a sword, even though it was rust covered, if you've seen the picture of this thing. And while initially reported as a Viking-era sword, it was determined to actually be pre-Viking era, dated around the 5th or 6th century. So it's from the year 400, anywhere from the year 400 up to the year 600. And many are saying that since she pulled a sword from the lake, that she should be the queen of Sweden. But Saga, she was actually born in Minnesota, which I guess you could say is interesting because Minnesota is the land of 1,000 lakes. And yes, it was a cool story. And I think that a little girl finding an ancient sword is pretty cool. And like I said, I got confused about this story. And somebody in the chat room mentioned it about King Arthur. Well, you hit the nail on the head right there. Because I was confused about this when I read about it. I remember about hearing or reading about a story a while ago about this same thing. And I thought it was a girl finding a sword in a lake. And I'm thinking, how many times could this have happened? Well, not too long ago, it did happen. I was doing research about it, this story, and I figured out I was right. I wasn't losing my mind. Well, at least not through this area I was losing my mind. But 7-year-old Matilda Jones found a lake. She found a lake. Well, she was in the lake, but she found a sword in the lake in the United Kingdom last year. Now, her sword discovery came at Dosemary Pool on Bodwin Moor, which got my attention because Bodwin Moor is home to a beast. The Beast of Bodwin Moor, very well known in cryptozoology. But yes, this is actually, if you know anything about history, this is the same lake where legend has it, yes, King Arthur threw his sword Excalibur into the lake before he died. I mean, think about that. This 7-year-old girl finds a sword in the lake where King Arthur had thrown Excalibur in before he died. I mean, uh-oh. A lot of people were excited about this story. I remember reading about it, but I know it fell apart pretty quick. Not the sword. The sword actually did not appear to be much older than 20 or 30 years. So it was probably just a movie prop from something to do more than likely with King Arthur. But it's still pretty cool. And it's still really cool when you think about it now. Two young girls, age 7 and 8, have found swords in lakes within the span of a year. I only found worms. Never found anything cooler than that. Oh, I found my bike once, but I was the one that left it there. So interesting story, nonetheless. And Well, I'll go ahead. I'll put both links in the chat room. So I know Dita likes to collect these. She likes to look at these links and read about them later on. I know she's read this one about the recent one. She's commenting in the chat room about it. So the recent one is a real legitimate pre-Viking era sword, which is really, really an awesome find. And could have chucked it back in there. The guy could have just put it on his garage wall and, you know, maybe tried to remove the rust with WD-40 or something, which would have destroyed it. But he did the right thing. I mean, it's a historical piece. We obviously don't get that kind of stuff over here in the United States, but good job for good, great parenting skills to teach your daughter about history. Awesome. So what else? I do have, well, we'll talk about the planet. Last story here. In case you didn't hear, and I know a lot of people space-wise are focused on the recent launch, and I was waiting for all the UFO stories to come in about this launch of the Falcon X, but so far nothing. I think people figured it out this time. It's becoming a sensation in and of itself about Elon Musk launching stuff into space. But, you know, the fall itself, when you think of fall, you might not realize this, but every year, seems like, there's some mention of the end of the world coming. Nibiru is coming to destroy the Earth. You know, every single fall, every single time this time of the year, we're all doomed because Nibiru is going to come destroy us, even though, you know, astronomers would have seen it coming for a long, long time. And last week, a story broke that had some thinking that the planet had been discovered. There was a little bit of talk about this last week, but amazingly, the conspiracy theory folks kind of left it alone. I'm not sure why. I'm surprised. Maybe they actually read it. A small dwarf planet. Yes, kind of like Pluto. Pluto's not officially a planet anymore, even though I'm kind of upset by that, but it is what it is. It's now categorized as a dwarf planet, but a small dwarf planet was discovered while astronomers were searching for what they refer to as the elusive Planet X. Many astronomers feel there is a giant rocky Earth-like planet somewhere out there in the distant reaches of our solar system, but so far it's been speculation. There has been some findings on gravitational pulls on objects, especially like this recent discovery, that still fuels the hope that there could be a Planet X out there. And astronomers and scientists have given this Planet X just this generic name, but it's the conspiracy theorists that call it Nibiru, or Nibiru, however you want to pronounce it. The new dwarf planet is named 2015 TG387. But that doesn't sound very cool. It doesn't sound very hip and cool. But there's actually a much cooler name of this dwarf planet. They call it the Goblin. So you can search, Google search the Goblin, and maybe it'll show you a link to this this story. The Goblin is only about 200 miles in diameter and is currently about 80 astronomical units from the sun. That's astronomical. 80 astronomical units. So an astronomical unit, in case you're forgotten from science class, is defined as the distance between the Earth and the sun. I got a measuring tape at home. It's 92.96 billion miles. That's billion with a B. 92.6 billion miles. Pluto, for comparison's sake, is about 34 astronomical units from the sun. So the Goblin, which was measured as, again, 80 astronomical units, may get as close as 65 astronomical units from the sun with its highly elliptical orbit. And with this highly elliptical orbit, it might get as far away as 2,300 astronomical units from the sun. That's pretty far. I can't even do the math on that one. Yeah, my measuring tape peters out around, I forget how many feet. But anyway, while this discovery doesn't have much in the way to do with the elusive planet X, many astronomers feel that this might be a breadcrumb to its eventual discovery, and that the orbit of the goblin might be influenced by this giant planet that waits discovery. So it's interesting. Actually, I usually get space stories like this without question. I get stuff from the American Meteorological the American Meteor Society. I get stuff from any rocket launch. I got the news about the Hubble issues that's going on with the Hubble Space Telescope. But I didn't get this about this astronomy thing going on with this planet, this Goblin X. But I did see something in the conspiracy theory dump bin about Nibiru and about planetary discovery. So I did a little bit of research, and lo and behold, a small dwarf planet discovery right here in our own backyard, which I thought was pretty cool. I don't know why it's not front page news. I mean, we should be worrying about what's in our own backyard more so than these other planets that are constantly being discovered well beyond our current reach in outer space. But our tiny little rock continues to spin, go around the sun, and, you know, we're always one inch away from anything happening, burning up to a crisp. Our sun will eventually swell up, and our oceans will boil away, our atmosphere will burn off, and we'll all have the worst sunburn ever. That is if we don't get nailed by a giant object flying through space that smacks into us and kills us off, just like our dinosaur cousins that left us nothing but birds. I mean, think about that next time you're taking a shower, or maybe tonight as you're gently drifting off into sleep. That it doesn't take much for us not to exist anymore. We're just this tiny speck of dirt floating in space. We're so small, so insignificant, even compared to our own solar system. All these rocks flying around the sun, billions and billions of miles away from the sun, and here we are, just this little rock, this teeny tiny thing, and all we do is argue and complain about everything, and we're sharing this rock. Like, think about that. Put things in perspective. And with that, yeah. I did have one more story, but I'm going to hold on to that for next week. I'm hoping it's going to develop, but they haven't got an answer. I was hoping that they would get an answer. And I mentioned this show was kind of a South Carolina theme. You might have seen this thing about this object that was floated on shore in South Carolina. People are flipping out about this because this thing was whisked away by officials, and this big object looks like concrete, but it's really made out of foam. Nobody knows what it is. It's probably not a big deal, but it's become a little bit of a viral story. But I will cover that in detail next week right here on the Paranormal News Insider. But with that being said, yes, I will see you. Rather, I'll talk to you. Rather, you'll hear me next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. Don't let your brains fall out. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.